He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed, and a new introduction was made late last week, which I watched online, by Hyundai. They are introducing an, I don't know what you want to call it, an anti-pickup, small pickup type of sedan or whatever, but it's called the Santa Cruz, and I watched a half hour or so, whatever it was, worldwide introduction of it, and listened to all the guys and women who were there to help with the presentation try to convince the public that a pickup that they're not calling a pickup is going to be as useful to enough people to buy it. Much like maybe the first early introduction of the Honda pickup truck, the Ridgeline, which has grown a little bit and morphed into a more logical-looking vehicle this year. Santa Fe looks cute. I don't know whether the pickup box is going to be actually big enough to haul all the things that the promotional people wanted to make us think it was going to be good for. But it was a slick production, and we'll see what happens when it gets to the dealers this summer. And, yes, if it's going to be cheaper than some of the other alternatives, namely the Honda Ridgeline, which I think is in the $40,000 and up range. Jay may know more about it, but it's going to be an all-wheel drive. It's going to be supposedly very comfortable for four people and hold anything they need to take a camping trip or a trip maybe slightly off-road a little bit.
Well, it's basically a chopped-off Santa Fe, which is Hyundai's midsize SUV, which is a great vehicle, by the way. And the Santa Cruz is like every other one of those small pickup trucks, and even large pickup trucks. It's just a utility vehicle with somewhat less practicality, but that's just my opinion. Because why would you put things out in the elements when you can put them inside a vehicle? But for some uses, and I think in this case it's going to be a recreational vehicle more than anything else, and I'm sure there's a niche for that. Ford is going to do the same thing with the Bronco Sport, and there are rumors that Subaru will do the same. And remember the Baja that chopped off Outback a decade or so ago, 15 years ago?
Actually,
I'm sorry. Going to do the same thing on the basis of the Forester.
And what were the, because I just saw one the other day, speaking of chopped off, is there almost a car that has a bed on it? What were those? And it's old, but I did.
Maybe it was custom, Jill.
No, it was definitely not custom.
Talking about the yellow Subaru that you see once in a while around.
The Subaru was a little pickup.
There was at one point, and obviously I'm showing my age, but I would say 10 or 15 years ago, it was a pickup like sedan that had a bed. And I will try and find it,
Try and find it and come back to us. Let's move on.
Well, there have been, there was the, in the full-size vehicles, there was the, the Avalanche, which was not quite a pickup truck, not quite a Suburban. Who knows what it was?
It's
you're talking
a big
more about a
version
sedan.
Of the Santa Cruz.
I can't put my finger on that. But there's a niche for that. For sure, and Hyundai's execution of it is pretty attractive. No doubt.
This is, just goes to the heart of the automotive industry. They're always trying to create new niches when the existing niches are so filled with competition that they don't feel a need to jump in, like the Honda Ridgeline is trying to do with the small pickup crowd. And Ford, as we reported in an earlier version of this show, is coming out with an even smaller pickup than the Ranger. I think it's called the Falcon or something like that, from an old sedan name. But so there's never going to be an end to somebody trying to build a new market for a new niche, a new type of vehicle. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, it's going to be, I think Jay's right, I think it's going to sell to an appeal, you know, it's going to appeal to a certain niche of the buyers for these vehicles that don't need the full range of the big pickups and the mid the mid-range pickups or the mid-size pickups that are on the road now, and hopefully it'll be a little less expensive because prices are going up. I want to move to a couple of news items aside from the Santa Cruz. There's been yet another report of a Tesla incident. The interesting thing about it is that there seem to be people who like to, I don't know what happened here, because apparently there was no driver seat, occupied driver seat in this vehicle, as reported so far. There was a passenger in the front passenger seat of the vehicle and somebody in the back. And this Tesla, apparently, they don't even know if the auto driving control was on. So it's really a mysterious situation, except that it made it for its, ran into a tree and it burned. And I heard on a news program this morning as I was driving up towards our broadcast area that the car burned for up to 5 hours. I'm not sure a car can burn for 5 hours, but they did say that this report, and it may not be justified and as correct, 22,000 gallons of some kind of fire dampening stuff to put this thing out. But okay, the point is that, you know, if there are drivers that are trying to prove whether Tesla self-driving it really works or not and does foolish things like ride in the passenger seat or whatever was going on here, I am still on record in this show as saying all electric self-driving vehicles are not really there for anybody to test it to the limits that end up in their death. And it's not the car's fault, probably. It could be the driver's fault. But that's it for the Tesla, the latest
what driver?
Tesla.
There was no driver. So let me barge in 2 seconds here. I think there's two separate issues. One, the car went off the road, and obviously you can't fix stupid. If there was nobody behind the wheel, that's a problem that right in itself. The other issue is that it burned for a long time, and we do know that crashes involving electric cars and you know, high-voltage batteries are an issue. And quite honestly, that is the one thing that remains that really bothers me with electric vehicles. And I don't have the answer to that one. As far as the stupidity factor and the driver, this is America, and I'm pretty sure pretty soon we're going to have little sensors in the driver's seat like we have in the passenger seat for the airbag warning. And if you're not, if you don't have a weight in the driver's seat, there's probably going to be a sensor that says, nope, the vehicle can't move. I mean, I think that's the easy and dumbed-down way to fix the problem. But
that is a problem. I think they need to supplement that weight-sensing thing, Jay, with a camera to make sure that whatever is in the driver's seat is actually a person, a live person, not a dummy, not a brick, not a cement block or something.
Okay, but we're back to finding all sorts of way to try to fix stupid.
Yes, that's
correct.
And
we can go on and on about that. Yeah. And
we don't need to here.
Yeah, it's an issue, but like you said in your opening statement, I'm not sure it's the car's fault, right?
Right.
So,
and I'm not suggesting it is. It's just you know, you get these sensational situations happening, and anybody who's driving a Tesla, I drove a Model 3, and I let it drive itself to Sharon, but I grabbed the wheel as I was going around the corner by what we have called here as the Sharon Reservoir, because it wandered too far over the center line in the corner for me to be comfortable that it was going to keep in its lane.
You were chicken.
And I don't think anybody driving any car should pretend that they can read a book and or take a nap and or do anything. But if they're going to sit in the driver's seat, they better darn well be thinking that they're going to have to drive the car at some point. And Jay may disagree, but I hope he doesn't.
No, I totally agree. We've gone over this a bunch of times.
Yes, we have.
Speaking of age and feeling our age, did you guys see that the Honda Civic, the new Honda Civic is out? We are on the 11th generation of the Honda Civic, and we've reached 50 years of Honda Civic. And I can remember the Honda Civic when it came out in 1971, 72.
It was a peanut-sized car compared to today.
Yes, Yes, it was. And I actually raced one in the early 80s. They were extremely light and made for a great race car basis. But they've evolved quite a bit. If you look at the new Honda, the latest,
oh
even
God,
the current generation and the next generation for sure, they are, you know, there's quite a lot of car there. And
there's enough of a car so that I don't think people need to upgrade a whole lot beyond it for a lot of features that that car now offers. And this is what's been going on to all the smaller cars. All the smaller vehicles are adding all sorts of features that you used to have to buy a larger vehicle or a more fancier designed vehicle to get some of these things. But I think small is good for handling. It's like the MX-5 and the Subaru BRX and cars like that that are light. And let's get the lightness. I've got this 84 Mazda RX-7, which is so light it's scary in the rain.
Yeah, I rode with you a couple times in that car, and the first time I saw a curve coming up, I was, like, bracing.
Exactly.
Because there was nothing around me.
Yeah, and there was no weight. And anyways, enough
and skinny,
on that.
Skinny tires and a crazy driver.
Right. Thank you, Jay. Let's go to the electric car industry, because one of the headlines in today's news is GM is backing off its what seemed to be a very certain path towards EV electric vehicleizing of all their vehicles by 2035. I think there's a lot of backlash going on behind the scenes as research is going on about the actual ability to convert production lines and plans for vehicles to all EV use by any logical date as close as 2035. Jay and I go back and forth about the reality of that being attainable, and I am, of course, presumptuous enough that they're going to be, first of all, they're not going to be all electric cars on the road by these dates that you see, that the people see in the news, but a big company like GM has got the truck line also, and the truck line can't go this route, I don't think, and the SUV can't go all this route, Hummer type of situation. People use these vehicles for more than just, you know, 100 miles a day.
I'm sorry, from a technological standpoint, I think it is easier to make an EV pickup truck than it is an EV car. I mean, it's a lot easier to store extra batteries
if it's easy to take out a depleted battery and put in a new battery something like this is going to be a plan of Tesla for a while, that where you're going to be able to drive into a charging station, and instead of plugging in the car for an hour and a half or something to get so many miles range, you could replace the whole battery pack. That has not grown in the idea fact from an idea to the actual ability to do that. And is it going to be like carrying extra cans of gas, Jay, as you're surmising in that last statement, or that they can change the batteries and take them out in maybe 10 minutes?
No, I'm just saying
they have a bigger platform.
A battery pack in a pickup truck than it is in a compact car.
Right.
And we know from the get-go, the Rivians and the Tesla truck both Rivian and Tesla have announced, I think, if I'm not mistaken, ranges that are over 500 miles for those vehicles. I think it's just easier to do on those large vehicles.
Well, you can certainly put it.
So I think the problem with turning pickup trucks into electric vehicles is not a technical problem. It's a marketing problem, but that's a whole other story. Transformation of the whole industry to electric vehicles, it's interesting. You're right. We're going back and forth with those dates that we hear, 2020, 2030, 2035. And to that effect, Washington State is the first state to have announced mandatory all-electric vehicles by 2030. That's less than 10 years away. I'm somewhat skeptical and not necessarily, I don't like that idea. But, yeah, we're going to go back and forth. There is a trend towards.
Yes, and you know, it's not for us to decide whether it's good, bad, or different. It's all, I think it's good at levels, and it's going to unachievable at other levels. As you mentioned, when I brought up the Jeep Chargers at the head of the Rubicon Trail, you know, who's going to buy an electric Jeep that costs $70,000 as outfitted the way they come these days, or Rubicon or whatever, and take it on something as horrendous as a Rubicon Trail, which can do an awful lot of damage to a vehicle's body. Jay is right about that. It's sort of laughable. I've been thinking about the whole idea of seeing electric charging stations at these way off in the woods, backwoods places. But to that point, we still have a situation where, and I think Jay will hopefully agree, that until you can actually recharge an electric vehicle of any kind, any type, in under 20 minutes, it's going to be awfully hard to convince the public to start owning them. And I think the industry's got to figure out a way.
Mercedes just came out, just made a presentation for. Mercedes just made a presentation that their 2022 EQS,
right,
which is the electric vehicle equivalent of their top of the line S class. So it's a large luxury sedan.
Right.
Arguably, the S class is the best luxury sedan on the planet, bar none. And they're competing with themselves in coming out with this EQS. And they're talking about, I think, something like a getting 180-mile range in 15 minutes' time. So if you can do that, and it's back to, you know, 70% of the, getting 70% of the range in 20 minutes or half an hour, we hear that a lot from electric car manufacturers. I think that range issue is just, we're going to blow that out the window more and more, and it's going to become a non-issue.
If they can blow it out so they can get 350 miles within 10 to 20 minutes, that will take care of my objections to the ability of them to be able to sell electric cars.
Well, I alluded to this last week.
Aside from the cost of the electric cars themselves, which the manufacturers are going to have to figure out how to sell them without national incentives. You can only go so far offering incentives before somebody runs out of money to give those incentives. And we have to be able to want to buy electric cars because of what they can do for us, as opposed to because we get a $7,500 tax credit, which isn't good for the lower end of the buyer class, probably, in terms of financial situations. And unless you get the base groups to buy electric cars, you're going to just be selling electric cars to those that can afford to and can use the so-called financial benefits that have been incentive to buy, start out with the Tesla cars and the early versions of GM's cars and others until they have reached the so-called, 150 or 250,000 sales level, which they're probably going to eliminate on a national level anyways.
Well, they're not going to eliminate. It's going to be.
They've got to become purchasable without incentives, and people need to buy them for the benefits as opposed to the financial rewards that some can reap and others cannot.
All right, and as I alluded to last week, I just want to go on record before we move on to safety tips. There is some evidence that technology is out there to make any range concerns completely obsolete.
It is coming fast at us.
And so it's once that exists and it emerges that doesn't cost a ton, and you don't have to sit around waiting for your batteries to charge. It's just a completely different story.
Okay.
All right. Who wants to do safety, Jay?
Safety. So I have two things on safety. I read something about the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, which is an organization that's sponsored by the insurance companies, comes out every year with a list of cars that meet their five-star requirements as far as safety, and they all involve crash testing. And I honestly forget what the list is, because in the 50 cars that are at the top of the list, pretty much all of the cars meet the standard and get the five-star ranking, or a lot of them. And the point being, cars from a
safety standpoint,
what do we call passive safety standpoint, have just become so incredibly better than they were like 50 years ago. Again, go back and take the Honda Civic of today compared to the little box it was in 1972, and we've made huge inroads in as far as safety. But the other thing is, crashes are directly related to our behavior on the road. And interestingly, although the death rate has gone down over the in 2019, there were less deadly crashes. I don't like the term accidents on the road, and it was a downward trend. For 2020, the stats are up. On a per mile traveled basis, there were more deaths on the road than in 2019 or the years before. And the consensus on that is that during the pandemic, there were less people on the road, and people just wanted to get out. And it's been determined that there was more alcohol involved, more drugs involved in fatal crashes that were reported. So, safety really it boils down to how, the judgment calls we make when driving, and we can circle that back to, the first thing you want to do is sit behind the wheel.
And hold on to the steering wheel and don't take your eyes off the road.
Correct.
Which in some very weird circles is called driving.
Exactly.
Sorry.
And it can be fun.
Yeah, and it should be something. It is fun. It should be something you participate in.
Exactly.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Yes, I'm going.